Welcome to Words to Live By, a podcast series hosted by the Ronald Reagan Presidential Foundation and Institute. Each week, we'll share some of the wit and wisdom of Ronald Reagan. In essence, words to live by, made up of radio addresses and speeches he delivered from the 1960s through the 1980s. Ronald Reagan was convinced that U.S. defenses had been allowed to deteriorate during the 1970s, and that this condition had left the United States vulnerable. In his view, an imbalance could encourage the Soviet leaders to believe that they could use their superior military strength to blackmail the U.S. and split its alliances. He also felt that U.S. weakness left him without much to trade when it came to negotiations on arms reduction. He was well aware that the Soviet Union normally insisted on equal reductions. If he began to negotiate when the Soviets had superior forces, he doubted that they could be induced to reduce them to a common level. For both reasons, President Reagan sought a substantial increase in U.S. defense spending, hoping to restore some programs canceled by Carter, such as the neutron bomb, the enhanced radiation weapon, and the B-1 bomber. At first, Congress was supportive, but by the end of 1981, it was clear that one program that the Reagan administration considered vital for balancing Soviet forces and providing potential trade-offs was in trouble. This was the new U.S. Heavy Intercontinental Ballistic Missile, or ICBM, designated the MX Peacekeeper. Congress did not oppose the idea in principle, knowing that the USSR had been building them up in large numbers, but rather Congress feared public opposition to their deployment. Nobody wanted them in his backyard, and moving them on railways or interstate highways was not acceptable either. But based on the best advice the president could obtain, he concluded that the MX Peacekeeper was the right missile at the right time. He intended to search for peace along two parallel paths, deterrence and arms reduction. By 1985, President Reagan activated his most successful persuasive strategy with a two-pronged approach. First, to engage the support of the private sector, he invited leaders from various business, labor, ethnic, and other interest groups to the White House and delivered a speech in the East Room. Then, just a few days later, he delivered a radio address to the nation on the same subject, eager to activate public support. So we'll start this podcast with his speech from March 6th, and in the second half, we'll hear his radio address delivered to the American people just 3 days later. Let's listen.
Thank you. Well, thank you. I appreciate this opportunity to speak with all of you today. I learned early on that if an issue is important enough, the best thing is to go directly to the people and enlist their help. And once the people are mobilized, they don't have to make politicians see the light. They just make them feel the heat. So, of course, asking for help suggests a certain degree of trust, which reminds me of a story. It has to do with a fellow that fell off a cliff and he grabbed a limb on the way down, and there he hung, dangling above the Rocky Canyon, and he looked up didn't see anyone, and he finally shouted out, "Oh, Lord, if you're up there, tell me what to do." And a moment later, a voice came booming down from the heavens that said, "If you have faith, let go." Well, he took another look down at those rocks 200 feet below, then looked up again and says, "Is there anyone else up there?" Well, we can be thankful that we're not in that kind of situation, but we as a people do face a decision that's vital to the safety of our country. And that's why I've asked you here today. One of the most sacred duties of any president is keeping America secure and at peace. And peace and security are not free commodities. They're precious, and like everything of great value, there's a price to pay. During the 1970s, perhaps as a reaction to the confusion and the division over the Vietnam War, the strength of our conventional and strategic forces was permitted to erode. And by 1980, it was clear that a weaker America was not a safer America, and that it was time to get down to the business of strengthening our defenses. I was elected in 1980 and re-elected a few months ago, pledging to put our economy back on track and to rebuild our defenses. Modernizing our strategic forces was vital. We unilaterally refrained from deploying many new strategic systems in the 1970s. Unilaterally refrained, even as the Soviets rushed forward to expand and upgrade their nuclear capability, testing and deploying at least three new intercontinental ballistic missile systems and stationing them in the hardened silos. More than 800 new missiles with some 5,000 warheads were added to their arsenal. Nuclear war would be the greatest tragedy, I think, ever experienced by mankind in the history of mankind. And we've avoided that tragedy because we've maintained a credible deterrent force. We can't afford to play political games with the delicate balance of deterrence. No room should be left for doubt about a nuclear exchange. No one would win. That reality has worked well for 30 years. And yet, if we're not willing to modernize our forces to keep our systems current, the credibility of deterrence will vanish. Knowing this, we began immediately to make up for the irresponsibility of the 70s and to revitalize the three legs of our nuclear triad. We've had some success. The Trident submarine and the B-1 bomber will go a long way toward filling the gap. But you can't sit on a three-legged stool if there's only two legs. The third leg means the peacekeeper missile, as we call it, the MX. Our current aging land-based missiles are suffering from attrition. The 22-year-old Titan missiles are being retired, leaving our land-based missile force with less and less punch with which to deter aggression. And that's one of the reasons we need the Peacekeeper. It's the most reliable and accurate land-based missile America has ever produced. It'll bring our deterrent to a state-of-the-art level and reinforce the futility of attack on any potential adversary. Whether or not that message is sent now depends on the Congress. We've proposed the production and deployment of 100 Peacekeeper missiles, a minimum investment needed for the security of our country. A blue ribbon bipartisan commission, the Scowcroft Commission, studied the security requirements of the United States and agreed. Prominent Democrats like the late Senator Henry Scoop Jackson also agreed. If America maintains a strong deterrent, and only if it does, Scoop Jackson said, this nation will continue to be a leader in the crucial quest for enduring peace among nations. Well, the senator knew the price of living free, secure, and at peace. Senator Jackson, well, I can assure you, I might as well say, I don't enjoy spending money. That might have struck you already. That's if it wasn't absolutely essential to the security of our country, my conservative philosophy would rebel at taxing money away from those who work hard to earn it. I grew up in the age of Coolidge. Some people think it was McKinley, but no, it was Coolidge. And he was a champion of thrift and economy in government. And yet even he knew the importance of strength. There we were in that post-war period immediately after the war to end all wars, when I think most of us felt that we had ended all wars. But in his 1925 inaugural address, Coolidge said, our country represents nothing but peaceful intentions toward all the earth, but it ought not to fail to maintain such a military force as comports with the dignity and security of a great people. It ought to be a balanced force, intensely modern, capable of defense by sea and land, beneath the surface and in the air, but it should be so conducted that all the world may see in it not a menace, but an instrument of security and peace. Well, that's the spirit with which we must move forward in this debate. We've requested a minimum number of peacekeepers, only 100. This number is far too few for any first strike. and it underscores the purely defensive nature of our proposal. The missile is now in production. The costs are reasonable and under control, and funding would not add to the deficit because it's already been appropriated in the fiscal 85 budget. What's more, we've had 7 excellent test launches. Of course, there are those who will continue to search for any reason to vote no. If the decisions were determined that way, our military could have no weapons at all. And this would be fine, except that the Soviets would not be suffering from the same handicap. Our goal is to negotiate with the Soviets, to reach agreements which will permit us to reduce the number of weapons threatening mankind, both nuclear and conventional. And as you're aware, next week we will begin negotiations in Geneva. The vote on the peacekeeper is also a vote on Geneva, and the Soviets are watching this with intense interest. So let no one misjudge what is at stake. Rejecting the peacekeeper will knock the legs out from under the negotiating table, leaving the Soviets no conclusion but that America lacks unity and resolve. I can think of no greater disaster for the negotiating position of the United States. Weakness does not make for good negotiations. This isn't a new revelation. President Teddy Roosevelt said it a long time ago. We need to keep in a condition of preparedness, he said, not because we want war, but because we desire to stand with those whose plea for peace is listened to with respectful attention. The success we've had in getting the Soviets to the negotiating table, or getting their respectful attention, as Teddy would say, can be traced not to vacillation, but to firmness and sense of purpose. We pledged that if the Soviets would not work with us to reduce the number of their intermediate-range missiles aimed at Europe, we would deploy our crews and Pershings to balance the threat. Our courage and that of our allies let the Kremlin know that we will not compromise our security and that we have the political will to stick with it. We mean no threat to them, but will not permit them to pose a threat to us. There should be no mistake. A rejection of the peacekeeper will diminish our chance of reaching a fair and equitable arms reduction agreement now or in the future. Without the peacekeeper, the Soviets will have little incentive to discontinue their buildup or to reach agreements with us. Years ago, I was a negotiator for my union. When we picked a team and sent them to the bargaining table, we stood behind them. Unity was key to success. Then we were seeking higher wages and better working conditions. The team we're sending to Geneva will be seeking peace and security for our country and the free world. It's the American team, and I need your help in backing them up. And I hope that we can count on you to get the message out that now is not the time to cancel a major weapons system or undercut our allies or to reward Soviet belligerents. Now is the time for American courage, unity, and resolve. Time to stand together behind our team in Geneva so they can represent us with all the vigor and confidence that they can muster. The Soviets respect this kind of resolve. Andrei Sakharov, a courageous voice for peace in the Soviet Union, understands this. He won the Nobel Peace Prize, and he holds the respect of the world for his struggle for peace and human rights. Well, he wrote to a friend in the West that arms control talks with the Soviets would be easier if the U.S. were to have the MX. He knew the risk of sending a message like that. Peace is not easy to maintain. It'll take hard work and diligence. It'll take unity and sense of purpose, and yes, it will cost money. This generation of Americans must meet the test. That's up to us, and I hope I can count on you, all of you, to give us help in this. There have been 4 wars in my lifetime, and I've said before, I don't know of a single war, one of those 4, that was fought because the United States was too strong. The truth of the matter is, the 2 world wars were because people on the other side looked at us, looked at our military weakness, and decided we wouldn't fight. I don't think we should ever have to fight a 3rd time under those circumstances, and I don't want us to ever have to fight at all. So thank you for joining us today, and God bless you all, and I'm going to place you in the capable hands of Secretary Weinberg. I don't think he'll answer with any of the points, or argue with any of the points that I just made.
More from President Reagan's address after this message.
The Ronald Reagan Presidential Foundation is the nonprofit organization created by President Reagan himself, and specifically charged by him with continuing his legacy and sharing his principles: individual liberty, economic opportunity, global democracy, and national pride. We must remain vigilant and work together to share these conservative principles with younger generations. Your role is critical to move our mission forward. Thank you for your continued support. Please visit reaganfoundation.org/give. That's reaganfoundation.org/give.
On March 9, 1985, President Reagan stepped up his efforts to win support for the MX missile, delivering his comments in his weekly radio address, which was plainly designed to increase pressure on the House and the Senate to endorse the administration's request to release $1.5 billion to produce 21 MX missiles. The president spoke from Camp David. White House officials said that the votes were expected to take place in the Senate around March 20th to 21st, that's 1985, and in the House the following week. Officials said the vote was too close to predict. It's still tough in both places, one White House aide said. President Reagan appealed to lawmakers to disregard party differences in the vote on the MX missile, which he called the peacekeeper. The stakes are so very high, he said. The vote on the MX peacekeeper isn't a budget issue. It's about our nation's security. When it comes to protecting America's security, we can't afford to divide ourselves as Democrats or Republicans. Congress agreed to allocate the $1.5 billion needed for the 21 missiles. But under the agreement, the money could not be spent until the new Congress voted to release it sometime after March 1, 1985. The closeness of the expected vote was measured by 1984 Senate vote, when a move to quash the weapon lost when Vice President Bush voted to break a 48-48 tie. In the House, attempts to kill the missile program lost by 6 votes, and a Republican gain of 14 seats in the November elections seemingly strengthened the administration's cause. Let's listen to the president's radio address.
My fellow Americans, I'd like to talk to you today about the deep desire we all share to keep America free, secure, and at peace. In 3 days' time, American and Soviet negotiators will meet in Geneva to explore ways to reduce nuclear arsenals and lower the risks of war. No issue concerns me more, and none has taken up more of my time than our quest for a breakthrough on arms reductions. I do so willingly because, as your president, and as a husband, a father, and a grandfather, I know what's at stake for everyone. And I'm pleased that the Soviets, after staying away for more than a year, have agreed to return to the bargaining table. The renewal of these negotiations is an important step in the right direction, and America will be ready to move forward on all promising avenues for progress. As I speak to you, our team is in Geneva. I cannot think of a more welcome message to give them than a strong vote of confidence from you, the people, and the Congress. I know that all Americans stand four square behind our negotiating team and wish them every success. In fact, you're the reason that the Soviet Union returned to the negotiating table. The Soviet leadership has seen your patience and your determination to keep America strong. They've seen the renewal of your spirit and the rebuilding of a robust and expanding American economy. They know we're going to continue moving forward to protect our freedom and our way of life. I want to believe the Congress will follow your lead, but that's not yet certain, and I need your help. Each House of Congress will soon vote on an issue that will directly and perhaps dramatically affect the outcome of Geneva. That vote concerns the modernization of our strategic forces with the MX Peacekeeper missile. Let me take a moment to explain what that vote is all about. Nearly 2 years ago, after a decade of indecision, confusion, and endless debate over the merits of modernizing our aging land-based strategic missiles, our political process forged a bipartisan consensus that united us in our common search
for ways to protect our country, reduce the risks of war, and work for dramatically reduced levels of nuclear arms. The MX Peacekeeper missile has been part of the consensus, and with good reason. Time and again, America exercised unilateral restraint, goodwill, and a sincere commitment to arms reductions. As a result, many of the missiles protecting our security at this very moment are older than the Air Force men and women taking care of them. They are missiles of the 60s, originally equipped with 1950s era technology. It's sort of like a 1963 jalopy with some new parts. You know as well as I do that in many states, automobiles that old will soon qualify as antiques. But the Soviets don't deal in antiques. Their response was the same as it's always been. No restraint. Just build, build, and build. While we debated and delayed, they developed three new types of land-based intercontinental missiles, and they've added to their arsenal 800 new missiles with more than 5,000 nuclear warheads. It took us too long to realize there is no easy, cheap way to buy security. In 1983, based on the recommendations of a distinguished Blue Ribbon panel, the Scowcroft Commission, the Congress joined with us to approve the MX Peacekeeper program, 100 up-to-date missiles that will replace aging Minuteman missiles. Since that time, the MX Peacekeeper has finished 7 successful flight tests, and the Soviets are back at the bargaining table. Well, once again, the moment of truth is at hand. As I mentioned a few minutes ago, each House of Congress will soon vote on whether to release the MX funds they approved last year and continue production of the missile. The Soviet leadership views the current debate in the MX as a key test of American resolve. If the Congress acts responsibly, our negotiators will have a chance to succeed. But if we don't have the courage to modernize our land-based strategic missile systems, the Soviets will have little reason to negotiate meaningful reductions. And why should they? We would be signaling to them that they can gain more through propaganda and stonewalling than through serious negotiations. The time is now to send a signal loud and clear that a united and resolute America backs our negotiators at Geneva, and that could be the real key to a successful outcome. My fellow Americans, the stakes are so very high. The vote on the MX Peacekeeper isn't a budget issue. It's about our nation's security. And when it comes to protecting America's security, we can't afford to divide ourselves as Democrats or Republicans. We must stand together as Americans. It's up to you to let your feelings be known. Your voice matters. Let it be heard. Until next week, thanks for listening, and God bless you.
The result? President Reagan's request for 21 additional MX missiles survived the final test of a year-long battle, as both the Senate and the House of Representatives voted to release the $1.5 billion earmarked for their purchase. Thank you for listening. For more information on the Ronald Reagan Presidential Foundation and Institute, including information on how to become a member, information on upcoming exhibits at the Reagan Library, and more information on the legacy of President Reagan, please visit ReaganFoundation.org. And don't forget to like and follow the Reagan Foundation on all social media platforms.
Until next week, thanks for listening. God bless you.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Words to Live By podcast in your iTunes or Google Play stores, and on other podcast platforms as they become available. New episodes of Words to Live By come out every Tuesday. Like what you hear? Check out our A Reagan Forum podcast, featuring great speeches delivered at the Reagan Library. New episodes drop every Thursday. And don't forget to follow at Ronald Reagan on Facebook, at Ronald Reagan 40 on Twitter, and Reagan Foundation on YouTube. Also, search for us on SoundCloud and Stitcher.